finally, somebody's asking the right questions. Somebody in the media dared to say, I think, what we've all been thinking. It's kind of like an elephant in the room, should I say, all along. The elephant in the room being that you gotta ask what Ukraine had or have on the President of the United States. I realize everybody was so quick to ask that question about Donald Trump. Of course, right? Like, we all get it. They all wanted to know the answer to that. There was that so-called dossier. There was that so-called file that nobody really investigated, just a bunch of sort of, well, intelligence, research, op-ed, basically designed to go after the competition. Well, now we get an op-ed that seems to be asking the right thing. Opposition research against Trump, and yet where is the real research that would look into some kind of concerning questions regarding Joe Biden? Right. In other words, what does Ukraine have on him in the way of his son? How much money was really exchanged? Now, this is, I'm going to share with you something that was reported to Fox News Digital that has not been investigated by the FBI. But allegedly, there is a source that the FBI has had that has said Joe Biden made some $5 million off of a Burisma executive. Well, again, this hasn't been run down the rabbit hole, so we want to be very, very careful with these kinds of allegations. But I find it amazing that back in the day, right, 2016 came, and you had all of these people saying that the election was stolen by Donald Trump with the help of the Russians, and that the Russians had Donald Trump in their back pocket because of that so-called dossier. All of that turned out to be untrue. And yet, when you have some evidence that suggests, that might just suggest Joe Biden and his son Hunter had a little more to do with Ukraine than maybe any of us originally thought, nobody's actually willing to talk about that. That's pretty remarkable. Welcome, everyone, to the program, a live edition, again, of the Trish Regan Show. So good to have you here. Please make sure that you subscribe if you have not already. We are brought to you in part by LegacyPMInvestments.com. We're going to talk more about the markets coming up momentarily because, wow, today was kind of a doozy, but you'd expect it, right, given what is going on with these banks, the regional ones. We're going to talk about that. But first, here we go. Finally, somebody has the guts to ask this question. And I'm talking about right here. We got a Newsweek article that came out today saying, does Ukraine have a compromat on Joe Biden? Compromat would be compromising material. In other words, is there some kind of dossier out there? And more remarkable, perhaps, is that it was written by a professor at a Massachusetts university, a Northeastern university, literally Northeastern university. He's a professor of political science there. I was joking with some friends earlier. He may actually be on his way to some podunk community college soon because he dared to say this. He dared to write this. But I encourage you to check it out. It's a very good piece in that this professor, Max Abrams, who, by the way, is the real deal, just wonderfully educated, an enormous background in international relations and in security issues. And I encourage you to read this in Newsweek because he gets into some of these questions that I think have to be addressed, that have to be asked in this environment right now. I mean, when you think about what we thus far know, consider that, well, there was that business partner, right, Tucker Carlson, that business partner who, Tucker Carlson, forgive me, business partner of Hunter Biden, who sat down with Tucker Carlson, that would be Mr. Archer, and Devin Archer told Tucker Carlson that, you know what, there was sort of this idea that you were buying influence. That was what they were selling, effectively, the Biden name, Biden family. And so when Joe Biden was vice president of the United States of America, well, what do you know? Everybody came calling, right? You had Ukraine, you had China. Everybody had their hand out or hand up looking for a little bit of attention from the United States. And, well, Hunter Biden, via his father, had the ability to offer that. Here's Tucker speaking with Devin Archer about just exactly what was being provided. Watch.
Did he have a sophisticated understanding of regulation, do you think?
I think that he led a team that had a sophisticated.
Okay, because I lived in Washington a long time around a lot of regulation. Also, a very complex area.
Absolutely. I think you got to be an expert in knowing the guy, and he was the guy that was the expert in knowing the guy.
He was an expert in knowing the guy.
Right.
And who was the guy he knew?
Well, he knew a lot of people, but obviously there was some familiar, you know, some his brother, his father, some of his father's siblings. So he knew a lot of people. And obviously, I know you're pointing to, you know, the father being the key relationship.
Right. In other words, the big guy. That was the one that everybody kind of wanted some in with, and that was the key relationship. So the problem then becomes just exactly what was exchanged, and what did Joe Biden know, and what does Ukraine have on him? Keep in mind, regardless of what you think about Ukraine and Russia, et cetera, here's the deal. It's costing us a ton of money, okay? And I say that as an economic journalist who's looking at the numbers, and you know, we're not even talking adjusted for inflation here. We're talking about more money that was spent in the entire 20 years in Afghanistan. We have spent roughly, actually, I should be careful, about the same as 20 years in Afghanistan. It may be more now, maybe adjusted for inflation. It certainly is. But in other words, this is a lot of money that you're talking about that we're spending over there. And one has to wonder just exactly why we're doing as much as we are. And why the heck, you know, by the way, haven't we settled this? Like, how is it still going on? You know, some people are making money off of it. Anyway, Hunter Biden was paid millions of dollars, according to these allegations, by this Ukrainian energy firm, Burisma, despite, of course, having no actual qualifications. We know about the $83,000 that he was being paid every single month. Well, he and also Mr. Archer were both getting $83,000 each by Burisma. Now, part of the issue was that Burisma was being investigated by Viktor Shokin. Viktor Shokin was the prosecutor that was going after them, and it was investigating them for none other than fraud. Well, did the vice president of the United States actually make Shokin go away and therefore that investigation go away? That's the big question, especially when you consider what Joe Biden said to the International Council Relations Group when they had that little meeting. And he talked about how, yeah, he got the guy fired. He got the guy fired. Well, Shokin just came out with a response to that, you see. And he's now speaking, saying that there was more to this and that he does believe, he's careful with the allegations he's making, but he does believe that this firing was a direct result of him investigating none other than Burisma's funding of Hunter Biden. Here he is. He's speaking Ukraine, Ian, I believe.
Watch. Biden что я намеков о прекращении дела Бурисмы не воспринял. Я шел дальше, я и мои коллеги, и мы дойдем до логического завершения этой ситуации. Понимая это, Байден прилагал все усилия кулуарно, используя своих, так сказать, людей, в том числе и некоторых нардепов, в том числе Лещенко, Наема, другие были люди, а также активистов, подозреваемых. Вот через них он и действовал, чтобы ни в коем случае не показать свою заинтересованность.
So this is Viktor Shokin coming out now with these allegations, which are pretty striking and pretty significant in light of, again, this question that nobody wants to talk about, which is, did Ukraine have something on Joe Biden? Do they have something currently on Joe Biden? Don't forget, like, everybody was willing to make these accusations about Trump quite readily. I mean, you can watch the tape and they were all wrong. You had a bunch of former spies, spooks, hacks out there now in the political arena saying, oh, but I'm convinced he did this. Not even I'm convinced he did. Like, there was such a definitiveness to it all that now leaves us all kind of like, whoa, wait a second. Why does nobody have any questions about all of this money that was exchanged? I mean, not even to mention the Chinese deals, et cetera. Well, the defense, if you would, one from Joe Biden is, look, my son did nothing wrong. How many times has he told us that? I mean, hey, he did admit to tax fraud. I mean, hey, I kind of consider that doing something wrong, as well as the whole gun thing while he was on drugs. But he said, no, my son did nothing wrong. Everybody's saying, hey, how dare you go after his son? You know, this is just a troubled kid. Kid my, you know what. Anyway, that's the sort of party line. And then when it gets down to it and people say, well, wait a second, how did he really know about this business? And why is Archer telling us that there were 20 phone calls between Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, and the clients? Why was the then vice president calling in some 20 times saying, hey, kid, you know, how you doing? And why was he sending a letter like this one to, we'll get it eventually, this one, why was he sending a letter like this to Devin Archer, in which he wrote, "Dear Devin, I apologize for not getting a chance to talk to you at the luncheon yesterday. I was having trouble getting away from President Hugh. I hope to get a chance to see you and talk again soon with Hunter. I so enjoyed our lunch. Thank you for coming." And then he writes in his handwriting, "Happy you guys are getting together." I mean, in other words, why was he knew something about the business. He certainly knew something. I mean, it wasn't all just smoke and mirrors and, "Oh, isn't it great? My kid's doing this, that, and the other." Anyway, the party line, the defense, and we've got to be in being fair. Let's give him his due. This is what Representative Dan Goldman out of New York keeps saying. You know, "Hey, there's nothing wrong. They were just calling in to check on his son." Why?
He said that he has never spoken to anyone. He said that he had nothing to do with Hunter Biden's business dealings. If he says hello to someone that he sees his son with, what, is he supposed to say, "Hi, son"? "Oh, no, I'm not going to say hello to the other people at the table or the other people on the phone." It's kind of a preposterous premise to think that a father should not say hello to people that the son is at dinner with, and that is literally all the evidence is.
Was this like a party trick?
That's all it is. Nothing to see here. A party trick, as one of the reporters offered up. Look, according to the Newsweek piece, and again, this is it's an op-ed, so you've got to be just mindful of that. But this guy, this professor from Northeastern, is asking some really good questions. He writes, "The latest evidence exposes the media's talking points as pure propaganda. On July 31st, 2023, that would just be a couple days ago, right? Devin Archer testified to the U.S. House Committee on Oversight and Accountability about both Joe's relationship to Burisma and why he fired Chokin. Archer was Hunter Biden's close friend who served alongside him on the board of Burisma. Under oath, Archer testified that Burisma paid Hunter millions of dollars solely because his father was vice president. Burisma would have gone out of business without, quote, the brand, and the brand was Joe." Again, according to Archer's testimony, per Archer, Joe Biden was involved in the racket. He was put on speakerphone in business meetings at least 20 times. So he seems to have kind of known something. Like, it's not like this kid was doing nothing. Like, it was important enough that he'd call him, say, "Hi, son," and say hi to all the business associates. This is something that Trump tried to bring up on the campaign trail back in 2020. Watch.
It's an open discussion, please.
No, it's a fact.
Well, you have raised an issue. Let the vice
totally
president answer.
Discredited.
Did Burisma pay him $183,000 a month with no experience in energy?
Mr. President,
my son did nothing wrong at Burisma.
I think he did.
Mr. President,
let him answer.
He doesn't want to let me answer because he knows I have the truth. His position has been totally, thoroughly discredited.
By who? And the media.
By everybody. Well, by the media, by our allies, by the World Bank,
by all the CIA, by the FBI, by everybody, until, by the way, it wasn't discredited anymore. Right? Don't forget. New York Post, one of the oldest newspapers, started by Alexander Hamilton many, many years ago. One of the oldest newspapers in America, getting its Twitter account shut down because there were allegations that they were trafficking in misinformation because they were talking about how the FBI was investigating the laptop of Hunter Biden. All that turns out to be true, of course, leaving Americans increasingly saying, "Well, wait a second, what do I believe? Who do I believe? And why is it that no one asked the obvious questions?" Except for a few of us, right, in the media, a few of us, I like to think honest brokers that actually want to get to the truth. Why is nobody asking the real questions about the money that was exchanged? I mean, I looked through those reports that have been provided by Treasury to the House Oversight Committee. And I can tell you this, it's something to see. I mean, it's public record. You can go and look at it. And it's pretty remarkable because you've got 20 LLCs that started up right after Joe Biden became vice president. Why all of a sudden 20 LLCs? And the money's going from here to here to here to here. Now, somebody might have a business and, you know, I can use like a construction example, right? If you're a contractor and you build houses and maybe you own some of the supply chains. And so you've got your wood business and you got your brick business and then you get, you know, this and that. And maybe you do it for accountability, literally accountability, so you can keep track of what this is and what that is. But in the case of the Biden family, they've got these 20 LLCs and the money's going from here to there to here to there. And that strikes me on its surface as rather strange. There's also a lot of money going through these accounts. Now, if they're not selling the name, right, what else are they selling? Now, is it illegal to sell the name? No. I mean, you can sell access. This is what these lobbying firms indeed are all about. But when your dad's the vice president or your uncle or your brother's the vice president, then suddenly it gets a little bit more tricky. I'm going to at least give Bill Clinton this, right? I'll give him credit for waiting until after he was out of office. Why was it such a big deal? Everybody was going after CGI while Hillary was running, because she was running. And people were saying, what were you doing after the fact? And do we have to still continue worrying about these financial relationships that you've established through the Clinton Global Initiative? Well, again, at least Bill waited until he was out of office. In this case, we don't know, but it looks like Hunter was trafficking and stuff while his dad was there. And I think that what we at least owe ourselves as Americans is an explanation for all of this. So I credit what the House Oversight Committee is trying to do. Again, Treasury provided them with a lot of information. Part of this included 170 suspicious activity reports, SARs, as they're known in the industry. Now, that's kind of a big deal to have 170 SARs, suspicious activity reports. I mean, banks don't really like reporting this stuff, because as soon as they report it, well, what do you know? Treasury is like breathing down their neck. And so they don't love it. But they have all these rules about knowing the customer, et cetera. So they'll do what they can on an individual basis to make sure that everything's on the up and up. But if they don't think things are fully on the up and up, and there is this international fund transferring going on, if they are worried at all, then they go and they file a suspicious activity report with Treasury. Now, you know, a few might be something, but to have 170 of them, that's peculiar. That's a lot. And so, again, it gets back to what exactly was going on and why did nobody address this? Apparently, it came up when he was vice president and it was sort of shut down by the vice president's office. Yeah, don't worry about that. But there were some people in the White House that were concerned that it just didn't look right, didn't pass the smell test, so to speak. So here we are now looking at what I do believe could be, if it turns out to be true, one of the biggest political and economic scandals to have ever surfaced. And it's a tragic thing to see, because I just go back to my sense of being an American, being proud of being American, and that's that we're above this level of corruption. And what might turn out to be true, if in fact this is proven out, is that we're no better, than any banana republic out there, for goodness sakes. I mean, we're effectively allowing our politicians to be bought and sold, and that is wrong. Speaking of politicians that are being bought and sold, one of the things that has struck me as challenging about the DeSantis campaign down in Florida is that he is somebody who's very much sort of bought and sold, right? He doesn't have any individual personal wealth. And so his entire career has been spent in politics, and thus he needs the support and the financial well-being of these various supporters. And I think that he's really struggled. I think he's struggled because, hey, how do you run against Trump right now? Very difficult position to be in. I think that Ted Cruz played it smart. Ted Cruz said, I'm young, you know, I'll sit this one out. Thank you very much. I don't want to necessarily annoy the entire MAGA base, but DeSantis, and don't forget, all these guys have egos, very, very big egos. It goes with the territory. DeSantis might have thought, oh, you know, I can do this. I can take him on. And yet poll after poll after poll shows that he's made a series of mistakes. He hasn't been able to really ingratiate himself with voters. He hasn't made an impact like people had thought he might. And so now donors are like, I don't believe in this guy so much anymore. And they're searching for somebody else. They're searching for ABT, I call it, anybody but Trump. You have a lot of people on the left and on the right, right, that are looking at Trump saying he's too much of a wild card. I don't want him. I don't want the country to go through all this, blah, 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 blah. And so they're looking at DeSantis as the appointed one. I don't think he's the one you want to put your money on because, well, you know, just look at some of the things he's done.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
If Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
That is correct.
In the future, can transgender women compete in Miss Universe?
Yes.
Make America great again.
So this is an ad that you're looking at that was created by the DeSantis team. I think it was a huge mistake of an ad, if you would, in which they have him running to the right of Donald Trump and trying to be more outspoken on some of these LGBTQ commercials, et cetera, than Donald Trump. So the thesis behind this campaign ad is, you know what? This guy is more to the right than Trump. And if you vote for Trump, then you're too soft on all these issues. And this is the guy that has the military background. He's going to be the tough one, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what they don't get is that part of the appeal, shall we say, that Donald Trump does have for a lot of Americans is that he has a certain kind of aspect of being self-deprecating. He has some humor. He has some empathy. And that actually sells him more than, say, DeSantis, who doesn't seem to have the humor or the ability to be self-deprecating or to have much empathy. And then you come out with a commercial like that where you really are emphasizing that he doesn't have much empathy. And now he's going to be to the right of Trump. That didn't work. We saw it in the polls. And then there was another one that came out and they had some kind of, you know, horrendous symbol that was associated with Nazi Germany. And it's like, who's making this stuff, guys? Like, it is a very poorly run campaign. And I do think he's a victim to a certain extent of very inexperienced staffers. But hey, Trump had inexperienced staffers too, and he didn't quite have the missteps that this guy's having. So DeSantis now today announced they've got the DeSantis 2.0. He's not calling it 2.0. I call it 2.0. But they're announcing sort of a restart of the campaign, if you would. And they've got a new campaign manager. The other one's fired. And we'll see how he does. I just think that ultimately it's going to come down to whether Americans believe he can thrive on a national stage and on an international stage. And thus far, he's shown a real dedication to local issues, but he has not shown the same dedication and astuteness to some of the international issues at play. And this is kind of, you know, what Trump had going for him, if you would, from the start, in that he talked a lot about trade. He talked a lot about China. He talked a lot about things that were happening on a very global scale. And people were like, oh, okay, you know, like he's a business guy. He gets it, da, da, da. So he kind of hit the ground running with some of that. And look, from an economic standpoint, our country's not in a good spot. No matter what Biden and his sycophants are trying to tell you, the Bidenomics is not working. Of course, you've got academics like this guy, kind of a hack if you ask me. This guy is a business professor, whatever, at Yale. And it's kind of like whatever way the wind blows, he's kind of a consultant. He'll come in and tell you whether or not you're woke enough. Anyway, he went on that MSNBC show that's on at night where they just, you know, can't love Biden enough and talked about how great the economy is. And like Biden's the new FDR. Watch.
The new business creation is up the greatest ever, you know, with up 30% over this past year and 50% growth in jobs. And who are those people we're hiring? There are people who were discouraged. We're seeing surging investment, as Jeff Zients pointed out. The new business creation is up the greatest ever, you know, with the Infrastructure Act, the CHIPS Act have all been huge boons to the economy and celebrated at long last by Wall Street. It's just some pollsters don't seem to have it right. The same pollsters who predicted a red wave last fall have people confused. And some of that's just because of, you know, a manufactured malaise that I think some GOP cynics are marketing out there.
Well, yeah, there's that.
No. I'm sorry. Just take a look at the numbers. Actually, take a look at what happened on Wall Street today, if you would, please. Mr. Sonnenfeld, Professor Sonnenfeld there at Yale University. Just look at what happened there at Moody's. Moody's has downgraded 10 major regional banks. All right, that's a big deal. That's a big deal because we just went through SVB, right? Silicon Valley Bank, which nearly went under, nearly took the entire system with it. I was on the front lines of 2008. I can tell you when these banks start going, you got yourself a real problem. That is what they call a systemic crisis. And the fear now is these regional banks, which are holding so much treasury debt, they have to. In fact, regional banks, they don't have a choice, right? Like when they have to invest your money that you put with them, they go out and they buy treasury bills. And the treasuries now have a very different portfolio picture than they used to have because you see treasuries are now paying upwards of 4%. The 10-year yield is upwards of 4%. It has to be, right? Because the Fed has to keep raising rates because they get to deal with all this inflation because everybody gave out too much money. Really dumb stuff, but that's what happens. Government makes dumb, stupid, idiotic mistakes. Everyone could have seen this coming, and yet somehow, you know, our whiz kids at the Federal Reserve didn't. And of course, nobody in government wants to see it coming because they just want to keep handing out cash. So we've handed out so much cash that we're now dealing with a real inflation problem while simultaneously not having enough economic growth to generate the kind of response you need on the economic side. That means stagflation. So it really is like a return to the 70s in so many different ways. I've said Jimmy Carter 2.0. Here we are. Consequently, now all of these banks, Moody's is late to the party with this downgrade, just like Fitch was with our U.S. debt the other day. But Moody's is saying, okay, these banks are in jeopardy. Well, if these banks are in jeopardy, then the entire system is in jeopardy. And again, just to go back, they're in jeopardy because they have to mark to market every single night and say basically what their books are, right? And they have to have a certain loan to debt ratio, and they can't basically, or they have to have a certain amount of liquidity and equity there on hand to meet any capital calls. Well, if they don't have those, they don't have enough money because their treasuries aren't worth as much because, hey, who wants 1% when you can buy a 4% treasury bill? Well, guess what happens? They don't have enough money to stay in business. And so if you have a lot of SVBs, this is exactly what happened there, out there, then how do we backstop that? It's a real question. And I think this is what Bidenomics is certainly missing. You just can't helicopter in money and expect that that is going to be the be-all, end-all, and that that is actually going to be the thing that changes your economy. No. In fact, that's going to give you the inflation that then you're struggling to fight. And that's where we find ourselves right now. So no, Bidenomics is not working. By the way, if you're somebody who's worried about inflation like I am, if you're worried about stagflation like I am, and you want to make sure that you're protecting your portfolio, one of the ways to do that, I encourage a lot of different things, but diversification is important. You should check out our sponsor, very first show sponsor right here on the Trish Regan Show, LegacyPMInvestments.com. They allow you to buy and sell gold and silver right there on the website, LegacyPMInvestments.com. You can call them at 1-866-589-0560. Again, 1-866-589-0560. But indeed, Moody's is absolutely right to downgrade those banks. Fitch is absolutely right to downgrade the United States of America and our debt, right? No longer the AAA we used to be, but this is the reality of the financial picture we now find ourselves in. Speaking of business, I want to show you this. Do you remember Elon Musk when he introduced his Cybertruck? He introduced this thing, and well, things didn't go quite as planned. He was really talking up all this bulletproof glass. Remember that? This was going to be like the be-all, end-all thing. And then this happened. Take a look.
Yeah. Oh, my fucking God. Well, maybe that was a little too hard.
Maybe just a little. Anyway, that was the bulletproof glass that wasn't. And this Cybertruck has been a little bit of a thorn in his side, I guess. I mean, Tesla's been trying to come out with this now for well over 2 years. I mean, we might be going on the third year at this point. So they've been developing it and developing it. It's supposed to basically replace the American pickup truck. I think that's a pretty tall order. It's going to be hard to do. Listen, I'm not somebody who's really into electric vehicles for a whole variety of reasons. I mean, maybe if you have a spare, right? Like just in case. But there's a lot of challenges that present themselves with just pure electric vehicles and having only an electric vehicle. So when you start talking about an electric truck, then, you know, a lot of Americans still, they're not there yet. They're just not there. I mean, I think if they had to be, they would be, but they're not entirely quite there. And Tesla's not entirely quite there. So we got news this week. He did a call with investors in which Elon Musk said it's going to be coming, but it may not be in September like we thought. So it got postponed. Then it was getting postponed to September. So we were supposed to see it maybe at the end of September this fall. And now that's not entirely clear either. If you're wondering how much it's going to cost, I'm wondering that too, because we've seen a few different numbers. He was going to have a $39,900, so just under $40,000 basically. That was going to be the first tier for the Cybertruck, and there was going to be one that was just under $70,000, $69,900 for the souped-up version. But, you know, we've had a lot of inflation, right, since then, speaking of Bidenomics. And so I don't know if those prices are going to be able to hold. We don't have a ton of clarity on that yet, but we shall see. Again, this is a live show today. I hope that you subscribe to the program. We've been talking a lot about Joe Biden. We've been talking about Viktor Shokin. We've been talking about whether or not people are asking the important questions, the right ones that need to be asked right now. Very few journalists are doing so. So I would appreciate you subscribing, of course, and I will see you tomorrow here with another live edition of the program. See you then.